minutes, Penny. Free will, choice, responsibility, accountability, and then scenarios to kind of make a point about when a person does blah, 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 don't they exercise their free will, their choice, and aren't they responsible for this or that consequence or action?
Yeah.
It's real simple. You just go, correct.
Yeah, I have to find a much shorter way of responding to that.
Yeah.
That's why I was late.
Okay.
Part of the fun is assessing your...
Quarter on in?
Yes. Assessing your audience. Right? I mean, if there's a wish to make a yogic, right, connection, which is an irrational connection, then right out of the box you can say, is there any opening there? Or am I not convinced? And if I'm not convinced there's any opening there, then the best route is Snagglepuss, right? Exit stage left. So you just, it's fun to practice. You go, correct, and you walk away. Yeah, that's it. It's amazing. It's very useful. But if there's an opening there, or at least you're seduced into thinking there might be an opening there, then work your magic, you know.
So correct meaning I see how you can say that.
Meaning,
more assertive.
If I say correct, I'll be able to walk the fuck away.
Yes, well, it all depends on the tone of voice, right? So correct meaning you are absolutely right releases you from anything.
Totally correct. Credit
later. Yeah, and that's his
contribution.
So it's really not an exercise in non-resistance.
Your non-resistance.
Right.
Yeah, you're the Aikido master here.
Yep. So
right?
You just kind of let the energy.
Isn't that always the case?
Express.
That's right.
Without a retort or a response or a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, but if an opponent has an opening that somehow touches you, then you know you can. Get into the dance. Otherwise, you know, you redirect and you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or not. Or entangled to your heart's content, right? Nothing wrong with that. It's a little exhausting,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Otherwise.
There's occasionally sometimes that belief wanders by that I really should have an opinion on things, and for the most part I don't.
Yeah.
It's been quite a while, but I remember when it first went away, it's like, what the heck?
I
don't have an opinion on anything.
That is strange. It's true.
It makes it very hard to motivate to vote.
Yes. That's right. You could.
Vote for yourself.
You believe something to
put your own name in there.
With your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, any way that we are inspired to engage in the conformist hallucination can be entertaining or compelling or absolutely missed. You know, doesn't really matter how you engage in the conformist hallucination. So in that case, let it be, you know, fun. If getting whipped up about candidates and then going to make a voting commitment, you know, is entertaining, stand online, froth it up.
Yeah.
You know, or take that Tuesday off. You know, smoke a bong.
And then vote.
Cheech. Yeah, they just go in there and scribble something.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Watch Cheech and Chong. So who knows, right?
Yeah.
But it is interesting that, I would expect, any one of us would expect, fair to say, that as whatever this is starts to weave its way into the fabric of your consciousness, then the way that you participate in the conformist hallucination is likely to change, perhaps profoundly.
Yeah.
You know, if you are smaller than a quark, and have equally as little motive, then what? right? What goes on in a life or in, you know, the beautiful rotation of the earth in a 24-hour period that requires, right, intervention. You've got a biological allotment. You're living in the first world rather than the third world. So far, we're still outside the FEMA camp gates, right? So chill out, deeply, deeply, deeply chill out. Mm-hmm. Or get excited about stuff, right? Attention seek. Convince yourself of things.
Well, one thing I'm noticing in having inquiry-like discussions with others is the presumption that my non-agreement, you know, with individuation being so local and owned, however it may show up, means I'm saying not.
Yes, that's right.
Not this, not that. So they'll bring up terms, this, this, and this. You're saying not, not, not. I said, no.
Yeah.
It's just very interesting how...
Yes.
...saying... kind of saying no to the localization of consciousness.
Neti neti, right, can be infuriating if someone is looking at it from the vantage point of human behavior systems.
Yeah, exactly.
Then it's not. Then you get accused of being of not this, not, not, not.
Exactly.
But neti neti at the right same time is an affectionate refusal of consciousness in its entirety. So then there's no argument with anything. You're not picking on anything that that appears in the human, right, field. The neti neti is like everything, nothing at all. And someone that doesn't have a sense of emptiness, right, doesn't have a little tickle of emptiness, has no idea how to relate to that depth of seeing. So then therefore they would look at any kind of invitation into abstraction or into irrationality as being a, you know, a refusal, a not or something. It's like, who gives a fuck? Yeah. But that is a profoundly mature shift. And as we play around with this, you may not see it coming. You may not really keep your eye on the ball as you yourself just naturally start to become oriented to a subtlety, right? A sensual, sensorial, textural subtlety of the nature of being, where your loyalty starts to go. And as your loyalty goes to that, then all the stuff that gets frothed up, right, at the human behavioral level, is just not a hook for you. And you don't even notice it.
I'm noticing more and more how the human game seems to be. Look at me. It's like a bunch of little kids.
Oh, absolutely.
In the playground. You ever seen little kids? Oh, watch me, Mom, watch me.
Yep.
They're just attention getting everywhere, on
yes,
every level.
That's right.
That seems to be all people want is attention.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
And I have so much patience for it on the playground. Mama, look. Mama, watch. Mama, awesome. But then when I'm with grown-ups, it's like, and I find myself, you know, saying, wow, with their situation.
Foghorn.
Oh, that reminds me of like when I was talking to Sadie and Anaya, and they're six. And this is what I told them. It might be relevant here. Like, it's just... patient. I don't know. Anyway, but it's fascinating that you should say that.
This attention seeking that we see behaviorally, right, amongst the species, and I don't know, is it more erratic or chaotic, codependent in the West than it is in Africa or Iceland? Or it's hard to say unless you're a world traveler and you get a chance to mingle with cultures and see how attention-seeking modes of behavior, right, express themselves.
We also, like, attention-seek within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really bizarre. Like, I have to have the same conversation with my thoughts sometimes. I'm like, didn't we just have this conversation?
Yes.
Come on. What? Let's...
Right.
Can we move on here?
I was there! I heard you the first time.
Shut up! It's like...
Yeah.
The same.
That's right. All restlessness, which is, right, you know, you could say biologically stirred up, as if there were such a thing, or psychologically stirred up with respect to fill the space, fill the space, fill the space. So thought by its nature, right, as an expressive aspect of prana, kundalini, right, life energy, will self-entertain. What else is it going to do? What else can thought do but self-entertain through, right, the proliferation of meaning and association?
Oh my God.
You can't do anything else, so give it its due. Let it do what it loves to do. No big deal. But it doesn't mean that one has to be identified with that process as self, right? Or even be annoyed by it.
Yeah. It's like having a conversation with anything else.
You know, a pigeon flies through the sky, and you're like, right?
Yeah.
See, no biggie. When it comes to, like, you know, driving or staring at a flower or buying a hoagie or whatever it is that we're doing, we don't get whipped up. But when it comes to thought, all of a sudden, it's a big fucking deal. And I have to negotiate and clarify and get it straight or argue with or tell somebody else or enroll or justify or seek revenge, plan, right? As if any of that's real.
We don't seem to pay much attention to, at least in my experience, it's like I have no idea what it's going to do next or what I'm going to do next. And that whole process is totally fucking, it might be entertaining, but it's totally irrelevant.
To see that. Thought, to see that thought is not really responsible for anything. Meaning, when, let's say you have the experience of making a decision, right? Choosing. Whether it's, you know, which coffee cup to get from the pantry, or whether you're going to go calf, decaf, or half, or anything. You can see that the impulse, the poetry of decision making happens underneath the radar of thought. Through a confluence of profound seducers that are way more intelligent and sensitive than thought. So decision-making, choice-making is actually occurring non-verbally, unintentionally, and it's not really seeking your permission or approval. That's how you're actually functioning.
Even for caffeinated or decaf?
All things. All things. Yes. Then thought comes in after the fact as and convinces you, meaning awareness, right? Meaning your capacity for awareness, not other than that. As thought says, oh, I decided. I made the choice.
Or at least even concurrently. That's still, it's not actually, yeah, like responsible.
So let's say there's three times, right? If there's time, there's three.
Right.
There's thought is premeditatively participating in the choices and decisions you make. Thought at least is agreeing with whatever choice or decision you make impersonally. Or thought has had nothing to do with it at all and is only invited to the party after the fact. So typically we think that I equals thought as the decider and the chooser and the assessor and the enjoyer or sufferer of events is what's happening. This gives the rise to a sense of self as deterministic, choosing and deciding and hopefully getting it right, or the seduction of hoping to make it better. And that's all myth. Absolutely, unutterably, like 100% and beyond complete myth. But the entire species suffers from the notion that you are actually a thinking, right, operationally, biologically operational thinking mechanism that makes choices and decisions and selections through mentation.
It's funny, I was in a good mood one day. This happened. I was thinking thoughts and they made me laugh. And I thought, this doesn't even sound like, this sounds like something Kevin would say. And I thought, wait a second, am I Kevin? I said, who the fuck am I? I didn't know who I was for like a second. It just tripped me out. And I don't know if it was anything, but it made me laugh, so.
Yeah. Well, whatever that was, that kind of awkward, strange yeah. spaciousness
yeah.
where you were in disbelief,
yeah.
legitimate disbelief
yeah. uh-huh.
of your own frothing,
yeah, uh-huh.
is what this is all the time. You know, so that's yeah. a perfect invitation or a yeah. perfect view for just how irrational and arbitrary yeah. life experience is from moment to moment. And you remember it because it's kind of unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's out of character. It breaks up the imaginary continuity of you as you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's lovely because you're
yeah.
startled. It shifts you. And that's what this is all the time, actually. What am I? Who am I? You know.
Mm-hmm.
Myself? What the hell does that mean?
Listen.
You know, it's like, so look down at your body just for a moment. But if you're not associating any sensation with the looking down at your body, you don't know whose body it is. I mean, it's like, it could be like looking at, you know, a mountain in a postcard. It doesn't belong to you. Just visually, right? Looking at your body, which is, I mean, you never see your face, you know, borrowing from what's his name. You never see your face. You just see this. But you see everyone else. But all they see is, you know, cannot see your own face. So you have an idea of how you look right now or how you appear by virtue of photographs or mirrors or all the ways that you seek, one might seek reflection, right? Oh, I look like this. I can recognize myself on YouTube or, you know, I was in a photograph. But right now, you cannot see your own face. You don't know how you are appearing to anybody else. And if you look, I mean, just look down at what appears before your eyes, it could be anybody's body. It could be anything. You don't have any indication that this belongs to you. Hi.
Well, not any more or less than anything else in our experience.
Not more or less than anything else that appears in your visual field. It's that. You got to be fucking kidding me. Once there's sensation, which is deliciously strange and bizarre, right? All of a sudden, a different level of association occurs with, oh, I feeling this, which creates the imaginary boundary field of, oh, body, I feeling body. See, now it's like mine, or the sensation is occurring in a way that creates a deeper hallucination that I'm this. Or speaking, or listening, or writing, or doing whatever you do, the consciousness associates with the permutation as being the defining, right? The bottom line defining element of your present experience. But it's not. That's what we're playing around with. That's why if someone has an opening to a transcendent dimension, you can play around with various ways of assisting them in discovering what this might be or what it might not be. If they end up in an argumentative condition, trying to prove to you that this is what it is, you give them a correct and you, you know, go for pizza. Correct. You are absolutely right. Yeah, that's right. You know what, you know. This is not about convincing anybody of anything, since anyone appearing in your experience is apparitional anyway. Completely. Anyone appearing in your experience is apparitional. So, you know, you're all animated meat puppets. And when I look down here, so is this. You know, fucking animated meat puppet. Along the line, right, there is going to be either a startling or gradual departure from being in a relationship with your present experience through the hallucination of body-mind. It's either going to creep up on you or it comes like these little startles where you're like, the whole frame of reference that Suzanne used to borrow from to make it clear to her that she was her was just fucking gone. Like, and that's really what this is nonstop. There's that much, call it qualitative freedom, if you will, in a present moment where you really don't know, right, who Suzanne is or was, what she is made of, and what's flowing through the awareness field absolutely impersonally and arbitrarily.
I can just start calling everybody Suzanne.
You can, and probably should.
Yeah.
Gabriel Cousins referred to himself as Gabriel. in the third person. Probably he still does. It's really a hoot. Gabriel feels, Gabe, I'm here. We're all here. You can say I. You know. Gabriel feels, he's like talks as if he's a walk-in. Nobody special. No, I take it back. For him, he's very, very, very special, beyond special, special to the nth degree. Mm-hmm. The Native Americans call him Yellow Horse.
Is he related to Norman?
Wasn't there a Norman Cousins, yeah, too? Wasn't
Yellow Horse? Must be.
Problem with bladder control.
Yeah. And Swami Muktananda, or Swami Muktananda's enlightened devotee, recognized Gabriel as having attained a Ramakrishna level of realization. I mean, just being enlightened wasn't enough. It had to be a Ramakrishna level of realization.
A black belt.
Yeah, it had to be a black belt.
With the pressure.
Yeah. Anyway, people are like that. They'll never be satisfied by anything. You could say it's the sickness of the self-condemnation of the clinically narcissistic personality. Can never be satisfied by anything, including themselves. They're in such conflict with their own consciousness that they cannot really unravel the knot of it. And so they acquire incessantly, right, false perimeters to try to participate in the social experiment. And it's actually quite sad. Because no true nourishment can ever occur. And you think, and they may look like, they appear as if they're accomplished in a million different things, way more than you could possibly be, and have been recognized by experts all over the world that pump them up and pump them up and pump them up. But inwardly, they're empty, and all they know is craving. Their sorrow is profoundly deep. It's a terrible disease. And very few of them can ever self-recognize. Well, that's the nature of the clinical narcissistic personality disorder, the hungry ghost.
I kind of think of Robin Williams in a sense. I mean, he certainly was despondent, you know.
Yeah.
I think of myself. I mean,
why not?
I would like to say not anymore, but at least something in me has seen that.
I don't think you can. This is a stupid and bold remark, but like they all are. But I would argue that, you know, waking up, going through the transmutative process of waking up, kind of requires a reconciliation with one's own narcissistic tendencies.
Yeah. Instead of picking out everyone else's experience,
yeah.
It's like, well, that's not going to help you.
Yeah. Right.
They might get really big so you don't miss them.
Yes.
Or so you're like glad that they're going. I'm done with it. I'm just done with it. I'm not done with it.
Yeah. This being done with is, it's not a reaction, you see. Some people could mistake it as a recalcitrance, a reticence, a reaction, right? It's not. Although some elements of being done with can certainly have their, you know, emotional charge. But really being done with it is not reactive. It's formidable. Perfectly formidable. See? Just this. Just this is being done with it. That means any and all apparent impositions of consciousness appearing in your experience are of no concern to you. But again, that doesn't suggest dispassion or dismissal of any kind. It just doesn't. You see? Typically, from a human point of view, if we're done with something, right? There's a... Right?
Yeah. I never want to talk to you again.
there's a dismissal. Right?
Don't call.
Right? There's a quality of dismissal. Right? But this, right here, right now, whatever this is or isn't, being done suggests... You are not on the receiving end, nor do you need to be deposed with anything appearing in consciousness at all. Go find the human then.
It just kind of keeps going back to that, like, hierarchical thing in some way. Like, the persona is no more important than that candle or relevant than anything else in your experience. But it's bizarre how somehow that sort of something kicks in where in that equality somehow it's not equality, that sounds ridiculous, but where this just knocks your socks off so much more than the persona. Like, there's so much more available.
Yes, there can be. And, you know, the thrill of more and other, you could say, is kind of a penetration into the view of the dancing Wu Li masters. So you begin to see or sense or feel, visionary or otherwise, that this is thinner than the quark's quark. And that everything appearing in proliferation and permutation across the great expanse of the observable universe is nothing at all. Dancing in a unicity of permutation, which includes consciousness and the absolute and black holes and universes as far as the Hubble eye can see, and the entirety of what looks like the day-to-day miracle of your so-called corporeal life. It's just dancing Wu Li master.
Yes, so you can watch your personality in that, but when you feel it that way, it's totally different.
That's right. You are, or experiencing is totally different when there's an appreciation, a deepening appreciation of more and other. Look at the craving that we have for insufficiency or malnourishment or restlessness or seeking, right? So that kind of insufficiency, chronic, right, malnourished insufficiency, which permeates the species, permeates the culture, is a symptom. You can't really find what it's a symptom of because it's kind of existential, right? Restlessness, irritability, uncertainty, filling time, right? The kind of mirage nature of consciousness itself, you can't really find the origin or the source or the genesis of it. It's too strange. Calling it a consequence of the Big Bang is a fucking cop-out. That's not real. And yet, you could say that in our ordinary consciousness, we can suffer from restlessness and insecurity and unsuredness and codependency and all the things that, right, wrap us up in various, a thousand kinds of entanglements and boredoms, right? Heaping on ourselves nearly nonstop, thank God for sleep.
Doesn't even stop there.
Yeah, and sometimes it's hard to get a break even then. Sure. But if you look at or are willing to explore the genesis of this profound existential irritability, which is so remarkably subtle, right? I mean, I don't know how many of, you know, clients, let's say, come and say, I feel like I'm suffering from a remarkably subtle, can't seem to find it, irritability, which is entangling everything and every relationship I have, and I don't know how to cure it. It's not a common complaint.
Not so much.
Not so much. Yeah. So it's remarkable to even be able to articulate it and to associate, you know, one's life history or one's feeling with this, always me, always an opinion, always a thing to say, a thing to do, something not to say, something not to do, the planning. Right? And the insufficiency of it all. It's like, oh, God, it's me again.
The horror.
Fuck.
The horror.
Really? But I think without having that kind of, you know, bold, formidable relationship with your own consciousness, then we just end up in superficial, right, avoidance, superficial deferral, superficial means and ways of trying to medicate a problem that we don't even understand.
And that's just so frustrating. I mean, that doesn't get anywhere.
And it doesn't get anywhere. I mean, you might have a relationship with the ascended masters. It could be conjugal or otherwise. And maybe that helps for a minute or two. Okay.
Bring it on. All right.
Let's do this. Let's do this.
I'll take
Where's
ascended master?
Where's Saint Germain when you need him? Where's Dwal Cool? I'll meet you at the candy store, Dwal Cool. So you look, let's say, if you're lucky, you might look then, go on a big adventure to see if you could discover the source of an existential irritability. Really get in it, you know, get under it. Don't just fuck around with the symptoms of yourself. Because that doesn't do anything. I mean, it may take decades to realize that it doesn't work. But okay, so it takes decades to figure out, or lifetimes, call it what you will, that it doesn't work. So, well, then maybe you're magically struck with a new bold initiative to really get underneath this mirage. Not just, you know, play around. Really apply yourself to it. And that's got to be fun. That in itself, you could say, is a profound shift from the apologetic codependence. Right?
From get the fuck away from me. Like, how do I get rid of this?
Yeah, moving into a formidable, profound relationship with the nature of your own consciousness can cure, or at least ameliorate to some large extent, apologetic codependence.
How so?
Well, because you're no longer looking outside of yourself for justification, for validation, for security, for affection, for anything. You're empowered, right? Enabled, embroiled in making a first-hand discovery, and everyone else can just fuck off. Without it, you know, then we're retreat goers till the cows come home, till Lakshmi backs back up into the stall. And here you go. Here it is. Here's the dilemma. Right here, right now, is the profundity of an existential nut that you can't crack, and the absolute transcendence from that nut. Same moment, same consciousness, same ordinariness that you are right now is both the unrelenting appearance of existential frustration and absolute transcendence from it. Flip a coin. See, you're not on a journey, right, to so-called get enlightened as a hopeful imaginary amelioration of an existential dilemma. Because if you're on a journey to get enlightened, where are you really? Well, you're still stuck, embroiled profoundly, entertainingly perhaps, in, right, this existential malnourishment. You're still an offspring of the myth of individuated consciousness. And so if you're still responding to this present moment, this one, as the offspring of individuated consciousness, what other experience can you have but a profound existential disorientation? You see? They're the same. They're the same. And presently so. Not in your past, not when you were born or conceived or turned 13 and were bar mitzvahed or not, when you had your first kiss. Right?
They're the same, meaning the irritation and disillusionment of unhappiness is the same as the magic of this, right? It's what this is made of. That's
here. That's what we have. You see how we create in our own imagination, in our own thirst for relief, we create a division. It's subtle division, but it's a powerful division.
This feels bad. Let me the hell out of what feels bad.
Yes. So we create a division when we go in search of any amelioration. Because then we've objectified ourselves. We've objectified the destination as being better than this, and we've objectified this as being somehow no good, not up to the task, not satisfactory to me. So you see, nirvana and samsara are actually this. They're not two, and they're not other than. It's this. So maybe there's a collapse then of the myth of being in search of. You see?
There's nothing to adorn, so it's like, well...
Yes.
You know.
If there's
not going to get a badge.
If there's no agency, if there's no agency, meaning the self that's suffering malpractice and then wants to get it right, and there's no possible adornment, that's any better than whatever this moment is right here, right now. This is it. You cannot adorn this. You cannot bedeck and bejewel this with anything more profound than this already is, like as in right here, right now. But the moment, and it's quicker than a moment. I mean, it's faster than a faster than a faster than a faster than a moment that this associates with itself, right, as individuated. Then the insufficiency of the myth of individuation is, right? It's a simultaneity. It's not like, oh, well, this like thought it was separate than itself, and then it started to suffer. No. Right? The myth of individuation, the myth of corporeal, disparate, whatever, is insufficiency. It is it. Then when you see it, then the entirety of proliferation and permutation of all consciousness, of all experience, of all subjects, of all objects, is of that nature. And you're like, oh, I'm fucked. I'm good. You see, being fucked by how profound this is, you're no longer fucked. But if you hold out as the fuck-e, then you remain fuck-id. So you stop being the fuck-e and you're no longer fuck-id. Then you're good.
Did Shakespeare say that originally?
Yeah. Well, they're Sagadatta, but they whitewashed it or something.
Yeah. But still.
Still?
You can act out of curiosity and interest and all that jazz.
All that jazz is... all included. All that jazz. It could be the jazz of the anthropologist, of the physicist, of the astronomer, of the astrologer, of the ascended master, of a guy that likes Mayans, someone that wants to sleep with Tibetans. You know, yak meat or yak piss. Take what you want. It's right? What within the entire bandwidth of what we call experiencing is outside of this? Nothing. There's nothing other than... Now what can happen is that you're no longer responding to this profundity, which is perfectly impersonal, as something that could actually be disquieting to you. So, right, the emphasis is no longer on circumstances and events or feelings or thoughts, because nothing that appears in the entirety could possibly be disquieting to you. Nothing. Oh, I'm totally fucked. I'm free. By being totally fucked, not being able, in a sense, to escape the profundity of the Divine Mother's, right, curiosity, you're like, okay, bring it on. Cool. And it can kill, slowly or with a sharp blow, it can kill the conviction that you're an entity in search of. And here it is. Plain as day. Just this. So, right? We think in terms of, oh, someone got enlightened or had a catharsis or something. That becomes an experience to attain, an experience to have, right? And so very subtly we objectify the experience, the experiencer, and the event as something worth occurring to the likes of me. Yes?
And that creates me.
That is samsara. Yes, that's right. That's total samsara. Now you might be able to see, whoa, there really is nothing I can do, should do, would dare to do, that can possibly get me out from underneath, right, the pressure or weight of insufficient experience. That would be surrender. Not sentimental. Not a vow. But surrender is realization, right? It's the same. Oh, I really don't need to do anything about this.
Because you really feel on some level that that's the case. That's why it's not, you know what I mean? Because you actually are nourished.
Yes.
On some very serious level.
It has to be the case.
You know,
yeah.
It's like...
That's right. If it's not the case, then we seek, which is cool. Then gradually or suddenly and more gradually and or suddenlies, that level of conviction, of seeing, of confidence in what this really is and isn't, is organic to you. It's natural to you. It's not a vow. It's not a conclusion. It's not a sticky note. It's not a thing to do.
Just like
right?
Sin.
It's not a behavioral preference. No. Because the entirety of all permutation, behavioral and otherwise, is appearing just as it's appearing right now. And the profundity of experiencing itself is of no concern to you. But again, not because you've been dismissive, but because this is so profoundly rich and fractal beyond imagination that you're nourished in the view. So what appears in it is of no particular interest to you. That would be the cessation of the conviction of individuation on the insufficient side of the fence. So the realization then is textural, meaning there's an intimate encounter with presence as presence. There's no longer any fracturing with respect to what's good, what's bad, what's working, what's not, what the explanation might be, what the definition may be, what happened to so-and-so. You're like, okay, okay,
yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
You see? Because the profundity of this being as it is, in your experience, sovereign, irrefutable, just as it is more than sufficient. I mean, there's no measure. That, you could say, is synonymous with cessation of self. The cessation of entity on the insufficient side of the fence. And you don't need an experience better than this one right here to reveal itself to you in this way. This is good. This is awake. Wouldn't it be fun to no longer be interested in hoping to be enlightened someday?
What? Do you still hope to be enlightened someday?
Well, I'm a special case.
Do you still hope to be enlightened someday?
I'm like 007, licensed to hope to be enlightened someday.
I just don't talk about it anymore.
Yeah, I just don't talk about it anymore.
Jen.
No, really.
I don't let that shit out of my head.
The root, the AAA map to enlightenment.
Do we have to be a AAA member?
Yes. is just you know, give the map away. Because it's not possible.
It's Google Maps.
Google, yeah. It's not possible for there to be a destination other than here, other than this. It's not actually possible to convince yourself of a sufficiently durable insufficiency that makes it plausible for you to feel better about life some other place, some other time, as the result of an event.
You know, a word keeps popping into my head, gestalt.
Yes.
Know, it's like, and it's, you know, it's almost as if to, I mean, I don't know. I feel like there are no practices or there's no techniques or any of that kind of stuff. But at the same time, there are things. There are practices and techniques. I mean, there is... Is it possible? It's a question. Is it possible to meditate on the ultimate gestalt, the ultimate everything, to wrap it all, to the opposite of differentiation, the unification?
Yes.
And...
Right. Why waste time meditating on it when it's just as easy, perhaps if not easier, to see that you are it?
Well, to see.
To see.
Or not to see.
Or not to see.
That is the question.
To shit.
No shit.
You know.
Go into the question and have a vital face-to-face with what the question and the impulse implies. If the question is alive, you know, if it's really got you, right, then you're simply going to have to either forget completely about it, which is most likely to occur, or unravel it, which could also occur. Yeah, or start doing practices if you feel that that's going to be of some, you know, value, right? Yeah. Sometimes we can have profound and vital questions as if they're really on the money, and getting the answer to the question is going to be of some value to me. And the more curious revelation might be, question? What? About what exactly?
What? Know what it's going to
you know
next.
What I mean? So this can reveal itself, and you could argue is always revealing itself, as profoundly, provocatively, hyperspatially evaporative.
Like
the entirety, like every thing or not thing else. Yeah. Just, I mean, here it is. You don't have to go very far to tap, right, into the vague, weird, and arbitrary nature of your present experience to see that you're evaporative. You might want to commit yourself, convince yourself, focus your attention on something or other to try to make it appear as if you can be static, and you can't. You simply cannot. And it's not because you lack IQ, maybe in my case, but it's because this is not anything.
It's not a really bad case of ADHD.
It does. It has a really, really bad case of ADHD.
Yeah.
Are we still in the same room?
Did you always have ADHD, or is it just recent? Because this might
make it worse.
Because I've, you know, in the past year or two, it's like, well, don't onset ADD. Wow.
I think you probably just notice it more.
Yeah, you just notice more and more. You have no fucking idea what's going to happen next. Not a clue. It's just all over the place. Like,
what you think is your precious consciousness is not your precious consciousness. It's the excrement of bacterial activity.
You're so fond of us. That's what I love about you, Jeff. You're always complimenting us.
The excrement of bacterial what?
Metabolism.
Okay.
Your consciousness right now, the bioelectricity of the fact that you presume yourself to be alive as a body mind is the outcome of the metabolic movement of bacterial and viral activity.
As a persona?
Creating piezoelectricity in what we call the neuronal space. And even that is not what it is, because all permutation, all proliferation, biologic and otherwise, is just imagined by a quark's quark sitting on the ass of a quark's quark, which is nothing at all. This is not made of anything. There is no Higgs bosonic particle at the bottom of the rung. It's just impulse. It's just impulse. But it's not relying on anything corporeal to express itself.
It's pretty incredible. I mean, really, this is pretty incredible. It's like...
Indeed.
It's so complete.
It is.
It's saturated and utterly complete.
Super saturated with itself, in itself. And as we become privy to the self-saturation of itself, in itself, there's no way that you can be on the insufficiency side of the fence. And yet, nonstop, just as this is self-saturated in its own glory, it can appear as if there's disparate nature. There's a sheath or a boundary field that you're at risk or in a bad mood or a good mood even. When you have an etch-a-sketch that God has, you can make anything appear. Anything. Including the profundity of the emotional bandwidth of what we have come to call ourselves as Homo sapien.
Yeah, I mean, even from a strictly materialist point of view, this is still pretty fucking incredible.
Go materialist.
You know,
it's still off the charts.
Yeah, it's like, even if you want to go there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What the fuck is this?
Yeah, really.
Skin? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Breathe. I mean, you put a band-aid over it and it heals itself.
Yeah, some that self-healing thing, right.
Secretly.
Yeah.
I had a minute with my hand this morning for what I've written. I was just like, wow, this is the fuck.
Oh, wow. I know. Look what it can do.
Holy
yeah.
Shit.
That'd be a mess if I had more than two of them.
It'd be an octopus.
I can't get past my hands. It's like the baby when he discovers his hands. I can never get past my hands. To go to therapy. Just look at your foot. No.
So let's say you've got a problem. Does anyone want to volunteer one? Just for fun. Make it up. Let's say you have one, because problems are cool. I mean, our friend Hari Nam from Vermont more or less insisted that any conversation that happened around him had to do with a problem, a crack in the driveway, right? Something to have to deal with. Because he just had a lot of fun, you know, kind of being a master of unraveling the myth of the problem. We this quality of this conversation doesn't necessarily go that way. We just go straight lofty. It used to drive him nuts. We would go lofty and he would be like, no, let's somebody talk about a problem.
Jumping the shark.
We were all jumping the shark.
It's not like talking about problems does anything anyway.
No.
Don't worry.
No, it's just a, you know.
I know, I'm a professional, trust me. I charge you for this shit.
It's like guru preference, you know? I mean, in Nirsagadatta's work, right, it was pretty clear that he wasn't going to navigate with anybody at the level of what was wrong with their life. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think so.
Smoke in their face and yell at them.
Right, this is the miraculous absolute. Are you in?
I'm here to answer stupid questions.
That's right. So go where you want. You know, I don't know. Eckhart Tolle spends most of his time probably talking about everyone's pain body experiences. Like that's got to be a waste of time. But it's his own fault. I mean, he set it up that way. Oh, there's a pain body. I've got one. I've got one. Eckhart, 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 Eckhart. Yeah, Alan, Alan. That's right. And then all of a sudden you're having a pain body fest. So it's the guru's own fault. If Adyashanti, right, gives the microphone out and people start talking about it, his fault. Because he set the tone. He set the tone for it. He was like, oh, yes, well, you can be enlightened. Yes, of course, of course. Eckhart, Eckhart, Eckhart. Well, this shit happened around Sai Baba all the time. I mean, as a frenzy, as a hysteria, out in the throngs, people would be, Baba, Baba, right? You know, private interview. I mean, to get a Woody around Sai Baba, you'd get a private interview, right? And then maybe he would give you vibhuti or steal a watch from somebody in Iceland, you know, and hand it to you, or have sex with your young son. You know, he could do all that kind of magic. Pedophilia, underage pedophilia, or manifesting watches. He was full one stop shop, full service guru. Baba, Baba, Baba. Private interview, private interview. And the people that got private interviews, whoop, I mean, they were elevated, right, within the community as, you know, special persons, worthy of a private audience with the avatar, right? Sachi Sai Baba. Gets pretty weird out there. Those Krishna guys, you know, down in Virginia, there was a homicide and there was some weird shit going on. And
West Virginia.
Yeah, yeah, right. I mean, a guy that I knew from years ago, lovely man, John Batiste, really lovely man, had sired a whole bunch of offspring amongst early devotees, and it was all hidden, and Alan Arkin was involved because he was a devotee, and it got really crazy, and John took his own life.
Wow.
He had serious spinal and other kinds
of... Is this a recent...
No, this goes back a ways. My mother was the one that called me and said, oh, hey, your guru killed himself. With great glee.
Yeah.
She found it in Newsday, you know,
yeah.
Long Island's newspaper.
She was probably... Oh,
yeah, yeah, she was. She yeah. Was like, thanks for the news, Mom.
I just wanted to let you know that this confirms how much of an idiot you are.
Yeah, yeah. My son, the dick. My son, who could have been a doctor, the dick. Hanging out with suicidal gurus and their illegitimate offspring. You failure.
Fridge.
Yes.
You're worse than a failure. Thanks for the news, Mom. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Maybe she could mail you the news clipping.
All right.
But this gets weird, win. Right? I mean, if you're living an adventurous life, what does that mean? A spiritual life, right? Certainly in the West, right? It can be a lot of fun. Devotees and fire ceremonies and people die in what are those called with the tents with the Native Americans? People die in sweat lodges and the guru runs for the hills or, you know, people end up on a high altitude mountain without anything to drink and someone dies from exposure and it's like, oops, you know, I just thought this was a place to meditate. Our friend Gabriel Cousins, you know, people died on his property, usually because of something he did. You know, the helicopters would come in and do airlift.
Yeah. Shit happens.
That's it. Shit happens. Shit happens.
We should do a reality spiritual TV show.
We have one.
We do.
This is it.
This is our show.
This is it.
If anyone dies in my house, I'm just going to bury them in the backyard and not talk about it.
Really? Shallow grave. Seeker found in shallow grave.
And then Fred will bring it back in.
Ew, in pieces.
Better. We'll eat the evidence.
God. Maggot infested seeker.
Yeah, no, make sure you eat the whole thing. Whole thing.
Okay, so no problems?
Well, I haven't tried.
I got problems. But
you got some, yeah?
Talk about them.
That's the best problem to have, yeah. I don't want to talk about it.
It sort of feels like you get tested up. Or something. Like funny. Things are going really well. It's like, I got this.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't ever say that.
Don't ever say that.
You see how excited we get, like the same children that are always pursuing attention seeking, right? We can get excited by novelty, by things going well, by a certain kind of abundance or smoothness or a beautiful
day. Just a nice day, yeah.
Anything, yeah. Right. We can, yes. And the Buddhist might say, don't go there. Don't go there. You know, don't get excited by anything. Right? Don't feel any joy, certainly no happiness, because you know what's coming. And you get this from Asian culture, right? And you see this in, you see this passive aggressively at places like IMS or Spirit Rock, where the West has adopted these self-denigrating, right, self-subsuming cultural identities and then sells it as, you know, Vipassana practice in the West, but it's just dripping with very awkward forms of denial.
Well, it sort of comes from a different culture, too, or maybe that's just the cultural kind of style. And, you know,
that's right.
We're not the same cultures.
Yeah.
I always had a problem with that. I remember reading...
He's got a problem?
A long time
ago. God!
About, it was sort of a Zen thing. And it was almost like putting it up like a good story, a good model. And it was just exactly about that, about this old guy who, was a Zen, I don't know, he was some kind of master of some sort. And his wife died, and everybody was sad. And he was, like, jumping around, being happy. And
metaphor.
The idea was that, that doesn't matter. You know, I mean, it was just a total denial. It was so obviously a denial. It,
right, right.
That I was trying to figure out how in the world that could be.
What was the value of the parable?
Yeah, well, I didn't see any value of it.
No.
I saw that as troubling,
Yeah.
It's like, well.
Right.
I don't know about the Buddhism stuff. I thought it was pretty cool, but that's stupid.
Well, you see, it's understandable that when you take the profundity of the Buddha's realization of absolute dispassion, transcendent dispassion, right? It's not easy to appreciate transcendent dispassion right out of the box. Mm-hmm. So we typically associate this level of dispassion with refusal, as Dave was pointing to, or denial of things that appear within the human field. And so then a lot of these parables get very confused because they're saturated with misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Pretty much seconds after the Buddha opened his mouth, it went downhill.
Yeah.
Where else could it go? And seconds after it became codified through repetition, whether of sonnet or song or, da-da-da-da-da-da, it went downhill.
Yeah.
This, whatever this tradition is, which is the perennial magical tradition of direct encounter with the ineffable nature of awake, it always transcends all of the cultures and all of the myths and all of the beleaguered spiritual superstition that saturate the consciousness. That's why this is always, from generation to generation, kind of weird, kind of secret. Not because we have a decoder ring, or wear cloaks, or don't invite people to participate. We can have a secret handshake.
Okay.
Yeah. See, so all of us. Everyone wants. I want a handshake and a cloak and a decoder ring. Otherwise, I'm not coming anymore.
Kate.
Yeah.
Kate's your.
But see, right here, right in the midst of the culture, in the midst of all kinds of spiritual appointments that one can have on a Wednesday night, a Tuesday night, a Thursday night, a Friday night, a yoga class, right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, this is just completely open. But who shows, right? Who got the invitation and responded to it? It's strange. It just is. It's not special. It's just its own karmic nature has always been, right, throughout the so-called generations of what we think are humans on Earth, this quality of transmutation is always just around the corner, and you'll never know it. Unless, you know,
a song around the corner.
Unless an invitation occurs.
Yeah.
It's just weird that way.
Then you can't get out of it.
No, yeah, once you
get hazed in and that's it.
couldn't you say if you waxed on poetically about your own life that you had a kind of a weird destiny, a strange, subtle hunger from as early as you could remember that you needed to fulfill something.
It's like a tractor beam. It's getting stronger and stronger.
And it's been there for as long as you can remember.
Isn't that the case with everybody? It doesn't appear to be the case with most people.
Not if you watch reality television.
Most people go, why do you do this? They don't get it.
As early as you can remember, this sniff has been in your experience. It always has been there. You were born with it, if there is such a thing. And so keeping your appointment with it is a fulfillment you cannot avoid. But someone else, even a dear friend, you know, an intelligent, thoughtful, well-read meditator, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, that has not been inoculated with this weird invitation, is going to argue.
Yeah.
Is going to create all kinds of myth and smokescreen to justify their investment in, right, samsaric, the samsaric view. Mm-hmm. They won't have the delight, the curious reunion with themselves.
Well, if the world's just reflecting back all this, then it's still sort of out of just experiencing and dreaming, theoretically. I don't know if I can speak to this with any great...
Make it up.
...confidence or anything like that, then, you know, this Motley Crue here is just, you know...
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those people who don't, care about these topics are still just being experienced back.
Yes. Yeah. Self-saturated. Just as it is. Perfectly self-saturated. It can't be other than itself. And the entire bandwidth of expression... Mm-hmm. Is itself.
It's a reunion with itself that never left itself.
That's right. Yes.
It's ridiculous, really, but it's funny.
That's right. I mean, you know.
Ta-da! I found myself again. I was never lost.
Anyone that would have a moment encounter with awake would say it just like that. Oh my God, I had a reunion with myself.
Well, really, on that level, what I've been feeling lately is like, there's never fucking been anyone else here.
No.
Ever. Nobody. Ever.
Well, it's interesting to have patches of that. And, you know, from what you're saying, it sounds very, you know, insightful. And I can respond to it even if I can't recognize it, whatever that means. But I'm going somewhere. But when there's those moments of clarity, it seems like that clarity's always been there.
But then you never lose it.
You know, then it's when it's gone, though. It seems like it's gone.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you don't have any say. Yeah.
When you can observe the formidable nature of forgetfulness. Yeah. In the midst of nonstop reunion, you scratch your head. How is this so good at forgetting itself in the midst of nonstop reunion?
Yeah.
It's like
bizarre. I mean, like they keep having these conversations, and they're pretty. You know, they can be similar. You know, they can be similar veins. You know, to them, and it's sort of like, but it's sort of like having them for the first time. Again. It's yeah. weird.
Revergence every time.
You know, there's a great Star Trek, and I think that we've talked about it before, where Bones suddenly, somehow he was able to I don't know if he took a drug or something, but all of a sudden he was like expanded, and he could operate on Vulcan Spock's brain because it would have been like pulled out of his head or something. I don't know what.
You're not doing a very good job. But keep going.
Watch this episode on drugs or something?
And he did all this stuff, and he was like, "Oh, this is child's play." And then all of a sudden this thing is wearing off, and he's like, "I don't know what the hell I'm doing." And then Spock, he allowed Spock to talk, and he told him what to do. But I remember speaking of a stony kind of experience, I remember a peak experience when I was like really stoned. I was just stoned, but it was a nice stone. And I just was, and so there is this recognition of a peak experience, of seeing it all. Seen the Gestalt, I guess.
Why don't we kill the recorder and light up?
Well, too late now.
Yeah, I'm going to be a payment stoner. That's what I've decided.
But, it's like, you know, I guess to really...
Get high and...
You know.
And donut.
Yeah, yeah, but I want to get high in the real thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Powerful gasoline, clean windshield, and a new shoe shine.
Yep.
That's just an
old Marcin.
Jack Kerouac.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Nobody's that familiar.
There was a movie that had that same kind of topic. The guy's brain, he got really smart really fast.
John Travolta.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
Great. I loved that movie.
Yeah. What movie was that?
Phenomenon.
Phenomenon.
Phenomenon, yeah, yeah, yeah. He got struck by lightning or something.
Yeah.
Well, he had a brain.
That's it.
There's one with Bradley Cooper where he took a pill and he
And that's, I think they're pointing to something. They're pointing to the expansive consciousness that we come to ourselves.
It's seductive as a experientially oriented human to have sustained peak experience.
Yes, it is. And that's sort of an entrapment in itself.
Yes.
Or a slavery.
It is an entrapment.
Yeah,
because as you can appreciate the mischievous and fractal nature of all creative expression, you're like, of course it can do anything. And you don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Because what it's revealed to you is, let's call it the heart or the kernel or the engine of itself. And so you're not duped by its expressiveness, by the permutation.
By thinking it should be some other way or whatever. You need to do something about it.
You're not looking for the fulfillment or novelty of sustained peak experience.
Well, like this shows up as a bad day. It shows up
it
as
sure
discontent.
Can. Oh, yeah.
It shows up as off the scale bliss. It shows up in all those ways.
Yes.
Why would we think that it should just show up in one particular way? It's not that one dimensional.
It's constant.
Anything shy of the revelation of what this actually is will necessarily be accompanied by division and craving. Hmm. Just geometrically speaking, dispassionately speaking. Because it's so abundantly, weirdly, provocatively, assertively, radiantly profound beyond measure, without seeing firsthand, gradually and or all of a sudden, the true nature of it. Anything shy of that is going to result in identification and confusion and craving and or the pursuit of peak experience or amelioration of some kind. It's not because you did anything wrong, right? It's purely impersonal that this showing up as embodied, disparate consciousness is going to be accompanied by this profound existential, yes, tickle. If in a given lifetime you see that, you have an encounter with that existential tickle, that is your invitation to ride the sine wave of the imagination and the beauty of your own life for the reunion. Without that invitation, without some weird encounter, intimate encounter with the existential tickle, then it's not likely a reunion is going to occur in the sine wave of your life. It's just the way this rolls.
So without existential angst, you wouldn't have any curiosity? Like,
that's right.
I don't know. There's stories about people that just get struck awake. You know, they don't have a big craving, they don't have a big history past anything at all, remote, and boom.
Yep. Yes.
Some do it through.
Well, it's all anecdotal,
pain.
Though, isn't it? I mean,
what's that?
It all seems so anecdotal. I mean, I don't know what the real story is on any of that.
We don't know.
Nobody knows anything.
Nobody
you
knows.
You think you don't know anything.
But I talk about, like, you
the
know.
Trouble I've seen.
Like if you could have deep brain stimulation and it would induce it, or, you know, all that sort of stuff, which sounds so comic booky to me, you know. Like will that be, there be technology like the pill?
Well, there is technology like that, where they're doing that now with, and on a very amateur level, with stimulating the scalp.
Yeah.
Very interesting stuff. You can, like, go to Radio Shack and build a little scalp stimulator.
Yeah, you engineers, get on that.
Yeah,
bring it to the group.
Yeah, do that in the garage itself.
What's going to be your assistant? I agree. I can do it.
Yeah.
That's the...
Well, that's the funny thing.
The cottage industry. That's the cottage industry. I was looking for a project.
Yeah, now you got it. There you go.
A scalp stimulator.
And that's
good thing you'll probably forget that on your drive home.
It's been on my mind for a few months now.
Well, get on
not
it.
The cottage industry.
Get on it.
And then we'll just bury the bodies in Francine's backyard.
Yeah, yeah.
This is starting to go our way. It's about time.
It's about time. Oh, not the temporal lobe, the other lobe.
Yeah.
Oh, whoops.
Starting to make sense now. I knew we had a purpose.
Well, somebody's got to start somewhere. I mean,
as you chill out in the vitality of absolute dispassion, this is wild. It's really unruly. Once awareness, which is the primacy of you, is unhooked and unhinged from any particular outcome, from any identification, then this present plenum of radiant expression is off the charts. But you wouldn't necessarily occupy it as a durable peak experience.
Because it's not related to your persona.
As perfect identity with this, which is the revelation of freedom, might look like it takes lifetimes or decades or whatever to mature to a level of confidence where it's truly your own, right? That reunion has occurred in your firsthand experience with sufficient vigor and sufficient, call it repetition, where you're like, okay, right? You don't necessarily have an enlightenment event to turn to. You're like, okay, all right. That metabolism from disparate identity as self and other to perfect identity, which is, oh my goodness, the reunion of self-saturation. No identity is right around the corner. Yeah. So you could say it shifts faster than you could say boo from perfect identity to no identity.
Describe the difference between perfect identity.
You know,
and
that, that's you know, Nisargadatta and I am that and all this stuff, and then he's like saying exactly the opposite at some point. Mm-hmm. You know? And that's what
he says, I'm not that. That is not.
As if you read the book upside down. Okay.
Yeah. It's the I am thing. I am.
Read it in Hebrew. Go the other way.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what I'm saying.
Yeah, the I am is, that's like loose change.
Yeah. But it was revelatory. I mean, as I read that, I still have it on my
refrigerator somewhere.
On my steamer. But I haven't read too much for long. But, man, for years there, I was like, wow. Every night.
The book I Am That?
I Am That, yeah. And it was, I mean, it was amazing. It really blew my mind. You know, I think there was just some value in reorientation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, an oldie but goodie. I Am That.
I'm just waiting for I Am Fat to come out.
Yeah, I Am Fat.
Nobody would get that.
I don't really care about anyone else.
Enlightenment by the pound.
Enlightenment by, I am fat. Enlightenment by the pound.
I'm just going to buy the book after he writes it. I don't care what anyone else does.
Krishnamurti was really good at, you know, saturating an audience with something other. Yeah. This isn't telling a story. It's just not telling a story. And yet it has a vital, activized capacity to tell a story and hear a story, to conjure meaning, purpose, durability, continuity, when there is no such thing. And you've always been of the nature of what exactly this is. The reunion is, in a manner of speaking, the cessation of a profound forgetfulness which this is capable of, right? Spinning. So whatever's appearing in your experience, sensorially, mentally, whatever, you start to appreciate the great spinning. And as spinning, the great spinning, it's now impersonal. You're not seduced into, right, negotiating with it at particular levels of expression, behaviorally, peak experience, what's right or wrong with my life, my to-do list, my plans, what I'm good at, what I suck at. You're just like, knock yourself out.
This
you know,
is crazy.
Write,
it's pretty
write,
much all that goes through my head.
Write a novel on my thumbnail all day long. Right? You're like, okay, whatever, whatever. Knock yourself out, whatever you got. Oh, I'm really interested. Tell me all about it. See? Now, if you start having that relationship with what's going on in your own mind as the unrelenting news reporter, which is always late and was never there to begin with, then you start just finding some relaxation or space rather than being identified with the news reporter that's always late and was never there, actually giving you a meaningful, you know, report on anything. And here you are. It's like, oh, this is not, it's not possible to get a meaningful report from this on anything. Oh, why didn't I see that sooner? Now you'll notice you don't just drop dead, though that might be nice. Right? You can still sit right the fuck here, wherever here is, and see with the most affectionate ease, the most affectionate ease, you can see that it's not possible to get a meaningful report about anything from the likes of this. So who the fuck have you been listening to? And why?
Sometimes there's good jokes.
Yeah,
you're the only channel that I
stay with the good jokes, of course.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater or whatever that is. Yeah. So here this is. It's not saying a thing. It's not telling a story. And yet it's not going to stop attempting to convince you that it's got a lot of really important shit to tell you about. But it can't say anything meaningful at all, and has never, and will never. And you finally get that. Oh yeah, here we go.
It's like I was watching this chipmunk this morning, and it was just doing its nut thing, you know? It just looked like a little computer, and it was just like, doot, 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 just looking for nuts. And it was encountering them pretty frequently and shoving them up. It's little mouth.
That's like me going up to the refrigerator.
Yeah, you're like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just like, doot, doot, doot,
yeah,
and shoving shit in my mouth.
That's right.
And no,
yeah.
I'm a crazy motherfucker.
Yeah.
You don't know.
Right. Yeah.
It's just bizarre.
To be successful here, really just two things. Know where your mouth is and a safe place to pee. You're good.
And poop. My dog tried to poop on an electric fence the other day.
Whoa!
That worked out so well for
him. He's a bold experimenter, that Fred. A bold experimenter.
He didn't know.
He's like Lily or something. John Lilly.
Yeah, as he was trying to poop.
Oh, my. She's like, whoa, man, what did I eat?
Then he would have pooped for a while because he was associating maybe, yeah, like, if I try to poop on.
Mom's feeding me electric eel.
Like, he doesn't know what the fuck she's at.
That's like those learned helplessness experiments they,
yeah,
did.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Does he now know and think every time he goes to poop, he's going to get shot?
I don't know how we do it, but we really hit the high notes on this conversation. We just get there.
So I'm here for.
Hey, what'd you guys talk about the other night? Yeah, dog pooping on an electric fence. It was riveting.
Profound.
You should have been there. Really, why don't you come next week? Who knows what we'll talk about.
Maybe this is why they're not coming.
Could be.
Yeah. Girl
are the recordings
about
on the internet to attract people or repulse people? That's the question.
You don't have to travel very far. Transcendent dispassion is right here for the taking. And it's not an apology. It's not sour grapes. Yeah. Transcendent dispassion is this. It's the window and the fulfillment of this incomprehensibility. All these great masters like Ramakrishna were really hip, right, to worship the mother. Why is that? Why did they choose that, you know, as the demonstrative path of their, you know, Hindu devotion, of their awakening? Because they saw that they couldn't outwit this. She's too good. She's too good. You can't outwit it.
And turns out you wouldn't want to. You're really honest.
Yes, that's at the end of the book. So they worshipped it, this, her. They worshipped her, meaning all that appears, just as it appears.
It's better than complaining.
The big thank you, right? Thank you, Ma. Thanks, Ma. Oh, whoa, thanks, Mom. The big thank you, which they demonstrated profusely in, you know, the richness of their lives. The takeaway, you know, in the Hindu path is like, oh, the mother is so happy that you've noticed, that you've turned your attention toward her rather than yourself, that you've discovered a quality of fearless gratitude in your experience, and had the balls or the cojones or whatever to thank her out loud. She took notice of your courage and set you free. As long as we're complaining, and we have a lot to complain about, right? We're not talking, whatever that's called, panacea, right? Pie in the sky. As long as we're complaining, as long as we're refusing, as long as we're negotiating and bargaining, then we haven't come to the full fruition of, right, absolute, undefended appreciation of the mother's grace, of the entirety of proliferation and permutation occurring just as it occurs in your experience, just as it occurs. So if there's no quarrel left in you, and you say thank you out loud, she's like, oh, I'm so glad you noticed. And she'll let you go.
That's kind of a codependent spirituality. It's just kind of spinning like that in my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I love gratitude, but...
Yeah, I hear you.
So it gets a little thick.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. In that respect.
Yep.
Well, it could be, I guess, yeah. I mean, you know.
Depends on how it lands.
Yeah.
Because you're the arbiter.
It wouldn't have to be.
Right. If it's an inner ma, no problem. Even though inner is not really a location.
Yes.
Right? It gets really busy. Yes. Very quickly.
But that's why it's fun to play with the metaphors.
Yeah.
Because you see what might still be remaining in you for, which is, of course, fantastic for explanation or justification or a codependent trigger, or I'm not so comfortable with that, or I really kind of get it, right? We're fishing each other out,
yeah,
right? Just to see what might be left in here that says no.
It's kind of like just saying yes to reality.
It's cool.
You're saying yes to your whole life experience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, yes.
Seemingly difficult or seemingly blissful. It's just yes.
Transcendent dispassion is what you actually are. Where's the quarrel? right? Where's the what about me? Geometrically, we make ourselves small, or this has the capacity to render the appearance of small by feeling other than itself, and therefore not in the gift or grace of the reunion. So Quarrel is my middle name.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of the samsaric gesture. If we fight and struggle and try to outwit it, right? If we're lucky, it'll go, keep trying.
Got him again.
Come on. Give me what you got. Bring it. Bring it, motherfucker. Oh, you're going to outwit me? You're going to outwit this? You're going to get a leg up on this? Fucking bring it. And so we spend however many lifetimes or decades bringing it. Trying to weasel out of this profundity on my terms. And she's like, then something shifts where the fight and the quarrel and the refusal and the cleverness, right? Just through really sweet, countable suffering. Flat lines. And where are you? Well, pretty much here, pretty much now, pretty much this, with no quarrel in sight.
Because you're just fighting your fucking self anyway. It's retarded. Not as a persona, but as there being no... You're just running yourself in a quarrelsome circle with no, when there's no division. It's like...
You're through with equations, right? You see it clearly, the geometry of mind, the geometry of self and other, the profundity of myth, and the quarrel that accompanies the myth, and you're done with equations.
They're not real or accurate. You just thought they were. Or, I don't know.
Well, it's underneath that.
Yeah,
right.
No, because it's a total bizarre.
Yeah, the reunion.
The level and layer of confusion is like.
The reunion is not the result of having figured anything out.
Yeah.
It can't be.
I guess you could say that's a human trait, right?
To want to figure it out.
Yeah. The impulse to figure out.
Well, it works out okay in physical terms, like building bridges and stuff like that. But if you apply it to meanings, deeper meanings, spiritual concepts of how things fit together, then it gets thick.
It's thick all the time, building a bridge. I mean, how does anything occur in a day? It's insane. It really is. It's like, what the fuck? Like...
Yeah, I guess
certainly not for my intelligence.
Spiders spin webs without, you know,
yeah.
Figuring it out, right?
Yeah, look at that shit.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, yeah, it's like a fractal. It's cute.
Let's give it some LSD and see how it
works. Yeah. Let's mathematically calculate.
Well, I feel relieved by from the sense of not having to figure things out like I once... compulsively, I think, to some degree, internally.
Mm-hmm. Nail this sucker down.
Was doing
yeah.
often. Like, damn, I'm getting good at this.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like,
right. Yes.
What?
Yep.
And after a while, it's like, geez,
yep.
It gets busy up there. And serious? That's why I like joking around so much. Like, damn, I got some serious shit between these temples of mine. At times. And then just like the relief of serious, okay. Fun? Okay. Something? Okay. Nothing? Okay. Argument? Okay. Give it all, you know, leave it in peace? Okay. Or not.
Well,
or fuck you to all that.
That's
I
good.
To wake up that day, you know.
You could say that you're free from the consequences of anything right now.
It's less sticky.
Less.
Yeah.
But your revelation has nothing to do with agreeing with a thing.
Are you playing with your imaginary friend again? No, it looks like.
Well, yeah, this is my imaginary friend. Welcome.
It's a spider yo-yo.
This is it.
This is it. It's also your imaginary friend. I think.
See how your being presently is sovereign and supreme and not fucked with by anything. And so these, let's say, compensatory mechanisms that we all are very good at throughout our adult lives of humor or minimizing or whatever, right, we've used to diffuse confusion. Even they completely relax. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the persona can go through some curious shifts because the identifications that framed us from the point of view of having a certain kind of repetitive experience and then the creative compensatory mechanisms that we may have adopted to diffuse our relationship with experience also chill out. Yes. So this freedom of codependence, freedom of enmeshment, freedom of entanglement comes with the recognition, the revelation of your own sovereignty.
And you say freedom of, not freedom from. Because it's there and you're not bound to it. It's not there. You're not bound to it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what you're hearing. You know?
Yeah, freedom is funny because freedom kind of suggests a freedom from something, being enjoyed by, right, the freedom knower. But it's not that.
It's like an inherent freedom.
Self-saturated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like SpongeBob.
Like SpongeBob.
And he's back.
One. SpongeBob Sangha. SpongeBob SquarePants Sangha. Constant saturation.
We come full circle.
Thank goodness. Well, it's 9:27, so that's enough of that. Thanks for coming. We'll see you next time.